This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In today's episode, Reggie talks about an aspect of experience that brings many people to the practice of meditation, unceasing thoughts. He says that the Mahamudra tradition does not see thoughts as problematic. Rather, they are understood as primal expressions of energy. This talk is from Mahamudra for the Modern World, a 37-hour intensive training course produced by Sounds True. Reggie will teach a residential retreat based on these teachings, March 22nd to the 30th, in Crestone, Colorado. To learn more about this opportunity to study directly with Reggie, visit dharmaocean.org.
There are three main areas of human experience that the Mahamudra tradition explores, as we've been discussing: the unborn awareness of our basic nature, the realm of mental experience, of ideas, images, dreams, fantasies, complex emotions that we feel, anger, whatever, with their all of the storylines around those, and the realm of sense perceptions. Now we are entering into the second of the three areas. We have already been working with the unborn awareness of our basic nature, and now we're going to be looking at the realm of mental experience and the realm of the sense perceptions. There is a basic difference in kind between the natural state itself and the realm of the mental events and the perceptual events. The natural state is the depth of our being beyond the cause and conditions of our ordinary life, beyond the conditionality and the specific facets of our identity and of our individual karmic situation and of all the details of what we usually think of as life itself. When we approach the realm of mental experience and when we approach the realm of perceptual experience, we're beginning to look at things that are much more commonly thought of as what makes up human life. We might ask ourselves why the tradition is dealing with the second two areas, the mental and the perceptual. I mean, we can understand why it deals with the unborn nature, why the fundamental basis of our being is important, you know, because it is beyond ego and it's clearly the spiritual dimension, you know, we might think. And you know, certainly within Buddhism, there's a tremendous amount of attention on the unconditional realm, so to speak, what's called the unconditioned, the area of our basic being beyond karma, the Buddha mind itself. You know, we can certainly understand that. But why would we want to look at thoughts, concepts, ideas, preconceptions on the one hand, and perceptual experience, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, on the other. You know, why look at those? Well, here again we come back to sort of fundamental teaching of Vajrayana. The point at hand here is something that we've been touching on throughout this whole program, is that in the first place, all of our mental experience and all of our sense perceptions, in a sense, are quite dangerous for us as spiritual practitioners. As all the great contemplative traditions point out, we become attached to ideas, we become identified with ideas, we become identified and attached in relation to different kinds of sense experience. And in fact, those two domains, the mental and the perceptual, often in Buddhist understanding, are what make up samsara. So one important insight is that this is really where we get stuck. We don't really get stuck when our minds are open and empty and free, when we've learned how to journey to the natural state and rest there. You know, we're in a state of freedom, we're in a state of openness, and we're in a state beyond ego. When we're there, you know, really there, there's no problem. In fact, that's in some sense what we're looking for. But the Mahamudra tradition is very practical, and what it's saying is, yeah, I mean, through spiritual training, you can rest in that open, empty, free state. You can be transparent to the awakened state itself and, you know, feel the tremendous sense of fruition when you're there. But the actual fact of the matter is that the relative world has a hold on us. The conditioned world of our mental experience and our perceptual experience has a hold on us. Even if we're very advanced spiritual practitioners, that hold is still there. And the hold is still there from the Vajrayana viewpoint because we have not resolved our relationship to that world. However deeply you may explore the natural state, however deeply you may be able to touch and enter the unborn awareness itself, and however wonderful you may feel when that happens, nevertheless, there is a momentum to our mental life and a momentum to our spiritual life, which we could call the unresolved karmic propensities, if we want to use Buddhist technical language. But there's a momentum there. And these areas make a demand on us until they're resolved. And until we make a relationship, the right kind of relationship, both with the vast, almost infinite world of potential mental experience in us, and until we make the right kind of relationship with our sense perceptions, we're always going to be caught. We'll rest in the unborn awareness, and then thoughts come up and we get hooked. Perceptions come up and we get hooked, and we begin to become trapped in them and caught by them and then dragged down by them, and almost like being dragged under the water. And we literally drown, in a sense, in our conditioned experience because we haven't resolved our relationship to the conditioned realm. Simply, and this is the Vajrayana insight, simply journeying into the unborn expanse, the immeasurable expanse of our true nature, doesn't resolve the karmic situation of our conditioned and relative lives. We are still vulnerable to the pettiness and the smallness of our conditioned nature. So the Mahamudra tradition has been developed, and the whole Vajrayana tradition has been developed to give us a way to work with all of the ways in which we get caught and lose touch with our basic being. Initially, we may feel that simply by receiving, pointing out into the unborn nature and touching it and tasting it, we may feel that that's going to solve all of our spiritual problems and resolve all of our spiritual blindness and blockage. But as time goes on, I think all of us, whether we're Tibetans or Zen practitioners or people who practice Theravada Buddhism in Southeast Asia, you know, or Western people or modern people in those places, you know, eventually we realize that simply touching the unborn doesn't resolve the blockages and the obstacles and the entrapments of the born, which is our samsaric person. So the Vajrayana tradition acknowledges this fact and encourages us to work in a very direct way with everything that goes on through our minds and all the sense perceptions that arise in our bodies. What happens in the practice in relation to both mental experience and perceptual experience is two things. The first thing that happens is that because of our relationship with the deepening mind, because of our relationship with our basic nature that is beyond time and space, strangely enough, we are more able to experience the full reality of our mental domain, and we're able to experience the full reality of our perceptual domain. Usually what happens for all people, and this is something that we've touched on, is that when we have no grounding in our own freedom and openness, then all of our experience is incomplete. Anything that arises in our experience becomes threatening for us. The fact of the matter is, as we're going to explore in this upcoming practice session and in the next couple, the fact is that our thoughts are not nearly as routine and familiar and domestic, and by domestic I mean tame, as we might think. Our thoughts themselves represent ultimately explosions of energy. And at the same time, when we actually have a thought, we're not able to relate to the full intensity and reality of our thought. Even a very simple thought like, oh, it's raining outside. What happens is, as with all of our experience, when we have a thought, we cubbyholeize it, as I've been saying. We put it in a slot, we give it a label, and we think of it as being familiar. And that's very other than the actual reality, as I hope shortly we're going to discover. When experience arises in us initially, as we've talked about, initially, in every moment of our life, there's a sudden experience of infinity, a sudden opening of space that's huge. And then the next thing is the energy. And the energy is what we're talking about here, and that's what we can't deal with, even with our thoughts. The energy that is present in thoughts is something we simply cannot abide and cannot deal with because it's too vast, it's too open, and it's too, in a way, destabilizing for us. So when we train in the unborn nature, we're developing, as I mentioned, a different vantage point from which to encounter our relative and conditioned being. When we begin to have an awareness and even a conscious mind that is more transparent to the vastness of our basic intelligence and the basic openness and endlessness of our awareness, then when we experience something like a thought, we're in a place where we can receive, more fully receive, I'm not going to say totally fully, but we can more fully receive the vastness of that experience, whether it's a thought or it's a sight, a sound, whatever it may be. When we don't do that, when we shrink the energy of our experience down, you know, there's the initial shock of basic space and openness and awareness that is unlimited. There's the energy of that. When we pull back, the interesting point is that we're pulling back into our ego, and we are, in a way, repressing the totality of the experience. And what happens is that it's not that the initial experience goes away. It doesn't go away. Whatever the totality of that energy was that we're pulling back from and shrinking down to meet our own ideas and concepts, whatever that totality was, it's still in us. It's in a repressed form in our bodies. We now know, I think, in the West, and it's something that's been known forever in the Vajrayana tradition, you know, when we deny experience, it gets repressed into our unconscious. You know, this is just like common knowledge in depth psychology in the West. And the unconscious is the body. So we have a situation where the vastness of the experience is still active, it's still alive, it happened. I mean, the reason we pull back is because we already experienced it. It already happened. It's already part of us. Once something happens, once some experience happens, then there's no way, there's nothing to be done. It's already happened, and the body receives the experience in a totally impartial way. That's the very nature of the body. You could say it's the very nature of the unconscious, that it's not judgmental. It doesn't have the barriers and boundaries of the ego mind. So it's happened, it's registered in the body, and it's always tugging at it, always tugging at us and nagging at us, and wants to be conscious. The journey of that experience that we're only willing to receive a part of wants, so to speak, wants to be completed. As Jung said, C.G. Jung said, the unconscious wants and intends to become conscious. As we would say within the Vajrayana tradition, all of the knowledge, all of the experience, all of the energy that is held in the tissues and the joints and the bones and the blood and ultimately the cells of the body, all of the information that is there, which is information about our own journey, wants to be known by our conscious mind. So one way to talk about the journey of Mahamudra is that we are making the unconscious conscious. And the only thing that keeps the body from delivering the information that we need so that each human experience can complete its mission to be fully part of our journey, you know, the only thing that keeps that from happening is the mental overlay that we've been talking about throughout this program. So through the Mahamudra practice, we remove the mental overlay, we gradually dismantle it, whether the mental overlay is on the unborn nature itself, whether the mental overlay is on our conceptual experience, which I'll explain in a minute, or whether it's a mental overlay on our perceptions. Basically, the Mahamudra tradition strips off and dismantles all of that overlay, the ego overlay, and not only does it allow the unborn nature to be accessible and fully available to us, but it also strips the overlay off the boundless energy of our thought process and the boundless energy of our perceptions. Within thoughts, there is infinity, and within the experience of our sense perceptions, there is infinity. What we discover through the practice of Mahamudra is that the thoughts are not inherently any thought we may have, any mental image we may have, any kind of mental experience we may have, it's not a problem in itself at all. And amazingly enough, it's not obstructive. It doesn't automatically be a problem for us spiritually. In fact, what we discovered through the Mahamudra tradition is that thoughts themselves become transparent to their birthplace, and their birthplace is the natural state itself. The natural state of mind, the immeasurable expanse, is where thoughts come from. And it's said in the tradition that thoughts are an expression of the immeasurable expanse. And once we receive thoughts in their totality and in their openness and in all of their energy, then we are already in the natural state. In other words, the purpose of thoughts, if you want to think of it this way, when they're received in a non-ego framework, when they are approached without the ego agenda, the purpose of thoughts is always to express a certain kind of energy of the natural state. When we experience thoughts in this way, we are experiencing the natural state itself. And when we take thoughts and we overlay them and we try to fit that situation into our ego and we narrow them down and shrink them down, then they become a problem. So it's not thoughts themselves that are our problem. It's the way we relate to thoughts. So here's a kind of important point. When we do Mahamudra practice, we're doing two things. One, we are experiencing the thoughts as they arrive in all of their totality. When we do this with any experience, there's no karma from it. There's no karma from it. Meaning that the karma is created, the ignorance is created, the repression is created, the blockage is created, the backlog of incomplete experience is created, which is what karma is. It's a backlog of experiences that we have just simply not been relating to fully. When we experience thoughts in a totally open way and we're not doing anything, we're not interfering or meddling with them at all, from an ego standpoint or from any standpoint, then they resolve themselves. They're resolved. They're self-liberated. They're free. And that's actually how we resolve karma, because the thoughts that come back to us, strangely enough, they are the same person in a way that's been knocking at our door every moment of our life since we were born, and maybe long before. And even though the thoughts themselves seem to be different, what's happened is because we're not willing to admit any of them, then the knocking gets louder and louder, and we feel more and more tied up by our thoughts. When we relate to them from a Mahamudra standpoint, we're actually exhausting karma of the mental realm at a huge rate. So number one is we resolve all of the karma, which means our propensity to get hooked by our thoughts. That's being worked out and resolved by relating to thoughts in a Mahamudra way. We can't do that simply by resting in the natural state. We have to actually engage the relative world, and we have to experience the whole mental realm, you know, whether it's discursive thinking, whether it's, you know, deep, powerful emotions with a mental content to them, whether it's subconscious gossip, whether it's images, memories, fantasies, whatever it may be. The only way to resolve the unresolved karma that our getting hooked implies is by relating directly to that realm, but doing it from the point of view of the unborn mind, being rooted in the experience of the emptiness and openness of the natural state, so that we can receive the totality of what arises in the mental realm and live through it and let it express itself fully without shutting it down or shutting it off.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.